Susan Dew is kind enough to join us. She, of course, is the exceptional writer for City Pages, and she's taken some time today to talk about some of the news stories she's been covering. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Welcome back. I saw you. You apparently were covering some breaking news today. There was a six-hour standoff in Minneapolis. What happened there?
Yeah, that took place all morning and afternoon in the Jordan neighborhood of North Minneapolis. A man was wanted in an aggravated robbery. The victim saw him run into a house, and he barricaded himself there for 6 hours. Police said that he threatened them and was behaving erratically, said that he had guns, AK-47s and such. They ultimately found a handgun, and there were tons of cops, just like nearly 50 officers from various departments, and they ultimately sicked a dog on him and got him on the ground and cleared it all up.
Okay. Well, and it is over as of right now, so that's some good news. But it's always, you know, when you look at the pictures of these places, I mean, it looks like anyone's neighborhood, and that's kind of the scary thing about stuff like that.
Right. Totally.
Congratulations. It looks like you got the cover story over on City Pages this week, right?
Yeah, I'm very excited that it finally ran. It's been a story that's been building for the past several years. It's about the Franklin Street Bakery, which is an industrial wholesale bakery in South Minneapolis, and it's owned by Wayne Kostrowski, the guy that came up with the idea for the Taste of the NFL, which is a very longstanding hunger relief charity that happens every year with the Super Bowl. And the workers there have been complaining that while Mr. Kostrowski is building a reputation for himself, sparkling reputation as a great philanthropist, feeding the poor, that they're not really treated with enough respect, and they don't have very good wages to avoid having to use the food shelf themselves. So it's a story about their attempts to form a union.
Now, and let's start there, because we do hear about these stories quite a bit, and you always, as a reader, wonder, is this just sour grapes? Is this just they don't like the job? What you lay out here is this really is a really low-paying job that, there definitely should be a higher wage value here, correct?
Right, and there's so much turnaround that I think reflects some of the conditions that they're working with. They had a lot of safety complaints in addition to the wage complaints. It's an industrial bakery. It gets extremely hot, especially in the summer. It can be over 100 degrees. People can't have water on the production floor, so sometimes they'll just drop. And also recently there was a carbon monoxide leak. Some workers fainted, had to get taken to the hospital. These are things that workers, are dealing with and wish that their bosses would care more about. So it's a whole slew of grievances that they have, and they've been unable to form a union over the past few years because there's been some retaliatory firings that the National Labor Relations Board has been sorting out. So it's the bad conditions to begin with, but then the retaliation for trying to do something about it.
You hear a story like what happened to Angel Camacho, and it's kind of one of those things that really brings us forward, is that, here he is, and as your story talks about, it's a 45-pound box of plastic on his shoulder. Because of the work conditions weren't really safe, there was some dust on the coating, a sheet of dust coating on the concrete floor. He went down, it popped out. He ended up having some hospital stays, some medical bills, and immediately, apparently, the bakery is like, "Oh no, that wasn't our fault. That's we're not going to pay." How did that case specifically end up?
Yeah, well, he got a lawyer and had the lawyer write a letter, and that's how. Plenty other cases at this bakery have turned out. It seems to be a theme that even if they do get injured, and there have been worse injuries than that, than having a great weight pop out somebody's shoulder, people have gotten limbs stuck in the machines. They've gotten cut. They've gotten rammed into the ovens with these these industrial bread racks. There have been a lot of injuries there where the bakery allegedly has tried to deny responsibility for. And the only way that they can get any restitution is to have go through the baker's union and get help finding a lawyer somehow who will help them fight their cases.
Oh, and that's by design. I mean, I've seen this kid. That's by design. They know it's going to be difficult them to get to fight back, and so they just make the other person who got hurt on the job doing the work that they were hired to do for the company basically fight to get paid for whether it's negligence or just an accident.
It's not unique at all in workers' comp law.
And you mentioned the CO2 people that got sick off the CO2. What's their status right now? Do we know?
The one worker that I interviewed for the story, she has not fully recovered, but she is back at work, last I heard. And she is still having issues with breathing. She feels like there's a weight compressing on her chest. She doesn't really feel like she's ready to work, but the bakery, you know, called her every single day since the incident and has been asking her, you know, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And she fears that she'll lose her job if she doesn't eventually go back. So she did. And she's still just trying to get back to the old routine. But there is a pending OSHA investigation. We don't know exactly what they'll find. Workers say that there were no detectors at the bakery at the time, and that seems to fit with the police department narrative because workers were falling over before, you know, there was no alarm or anything. Mm-hmm. So they knew what was happening once people started fainting.
Well, and that's big time illegal too. I mean, I'm not mistaken, for a large business that you have to have CO2 detectors in there. That didn't that get passed in Minnesota like 10 years ago?
Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah. I think they do have to have the detectors. I don't know when it was passed, but especially for an industrial bakery, when you have like more than a dozen large ovens running around the clock, that's a pretty standard industry expectation.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a parallel here to the Starkey hearing aid fiasco that happened over there, because Starkey does a lot of good work and they do this big annual gala fundraiser. They raise a lot of money. They donate a lot of product there and they do a lot of good work out there. This idea for, you mentioned that Wayne Kostrowski came up with the idea of Taste of the NFL. That was back in 1992 when they first hosted the Super Bowl back then. And I mean, you can't deny the fact that Taste of the NFL has done a tremendous job at raising an incredible amount of money. That this idea, this brain trust of Kostrowski, is actually done a lot of good for many different communities across the country.
Absolutely, yeah, and he should receive credit for that. The issue is the hypocrisy of doing this very high-profile charity event every year and getting all that credit while not really looking right at home for how he could personally make a difference in his workers' lives, many of whom, like, you know, came here from other countries in search of the American dream and for the chance to prosper in return for hard work. And the other thing about the Taste of the NFL is that I think Mr. Kostrowski has really exaggerated the amount of money that he donates every year. There's actually quite a lot of the proceeds that gets just folded back into the cost of throwing a party with celebrity chefs, with football players. It's kind of like a red carpet gala for him and his friends and some well-meaning beneficiaries. But a lot of the money actually is just used on the event itself, and Mr. Kostrowski takes over $100,000 a management fee to put it together. At the end of the day, it's just a much smaller fraction that gets divvied out to hunger relief programs, working communities.
Kostrowski, he runs Cuisine Concepts. That's Tejas, Goodfellas Bar Abilene, as well as also he was member, as you mentioned on the story, the chair of the Edina Chamber of Commerce. I'm presuming he was not returning your phone calls when you asked for a comment on the story.
Yeah, he did not want to sit down and talk, although I would have loved to do that. Mm-hmm. Seems like a guy with a lot of experience, and I'm sure that's, you know, I'm sure it would have been an uncomfortable conversation, but I would have been open-minded. I would have loved to hear him out.
And one thing I want you and I can just say here for the record, we understand, I mean, as you write about this and you learn about this, I've done reports and done talks, and I've talked to a lot of people who are restaurateurs. It's a real tough business. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hours. The margins aren't there. This is not about whether or not the industry as a whole is corrupt. It's about the fact that even with those margins, there's a ton of people that run these businesses that generally don't have these issues. And so it is something which definitely deserves a little bit of a closer view. And as you mentioned, there is an OSHA review going on right now?
Yes.
All right. Well, with excellent work on the cover story there. Let's mention two other stories that you've been following, and you've been following this one for a while. Mohammed Noor was charged with some crimes in the Justine DeMond shooting here. This has been an interesting story, and to see these charges filed, I'm glad. We have yet another case in the city of Minneapolis in the metro area of a police officer shooting a completely innocent victim out of what they say is fear, in a state which has laws which say, well, if he was afraid, he can gun down anyone he wants to. And this, so the idea that there are charges filed, I think, is enlightening. Whether or not there's going to be actual convictions or a court case remains to be seen. What are your thoughts as you've been following the story, as when they announced the charges and Noor turned himself in? I think he's out on bail as of right now, too.
Yeah, well, I think you're exactly right that Mike Freeman has a very high standard of proof to meet. There was very little evidence in this case. There was no video. He's going to have to prove to a jury that it was objectively unreasonable for Mohammed Noor to have feared so much for his life or his partner's life to have fired on Justine. And fear is such a subjective thing, and especially the fear of a police officer who has different experiences than the rest of us can fairly say so. It's a very difficult thing to prove. It seemed in the charges, it was interesting that Noor's partner, Matthew Harity, seemed to be helping his case by testifying that he, too, pulled his gun when Justine first appeared because he was startled, in that he, you know, allegedly kept that gun close to his chest, pointed downward, as he was trying to figure out who she was and whether she was armed. And that certainly lends credence to what I'm sure the defense will say as far as nor fearing for his life because it was such a sudden, I guess, slap on the back of the car. But we don't really know if that's for sure what happened, that Officer Harity also pulled his gun, because neither officer had their body cams on at the time. So I think that his testimony will probably help Noor. And another interesting thing is that Officer Harity said he didn't see a gun. So I'm not sure what significance that will be, but he did say he didn't see that smoking gun.
No, the body camera thing, you brought up the body camera thing. That's, once again, here we go. We have body cameras to, you know, for basically, you know, so that we don't have questions answered and we didn't have the body cameras on until after the fact. I'll also point out the fact that they apparently never stopped in the alleyway. They got reports of a disturbance in the alleyway, and you'd think a police officer would, I don't know, get out of the car, or at least stop the car. They didn't even stop. They kind of slow rolled all the way down the alley. They didn't even stop the vehicle. They basically, you know, just kind of cruised through the alleyway and at no point stopped. I mean, once again, and we can go back to the Jamar Clark, we can go to the Philando Castile, we have yet another case where there seems to be a lack of training that is just being exposed into the nth degree, which led up to this, which I just wonder if we shouldn't be looking far more. I mean, obviously the training of not shooting people without guns is an important element of this, but whether it was Jamar Clark in the San Diego maneuver or Philando Castile telling him, I've got a, I've got a registered weapon on me here. I've got a license to carry, and still getting gunned down. You know, it seems to me that this is a problem. This exposes a much larger problem in the Minneapolis police force, specifically that it's there seems to be a lack of training that's going on in what you do in situations.
Yeah, I think lack of experience probably was a running theme through all of these cases that you just mentioned. So right now we can only speculate. It'll be a very interesting trial, I'm sure.
Oh, and final story I want to make sure we mention here. Oh boy, kids, get your tickets now. Tommy Lauren is going to be coming the Fox News screaming harpy. That's screaming at her. I love how you said that, by the way. The Screaming Head is coming to Minneapolis, the Pantages Theater, on May 19th. Boy, I imagine it's going to have at least dozens of people show up for this.
No doubt. No doubt. And it's such a bizarre schedule because she's on a tour. She's on her Final Thoughts tour. And the tour consists of two appearances, one being Minneapolis, and the other being Glenside, Pennsylvania, which is a small town of about 8,000 people. So it makes me wonder, like, giving her the best benefit of the doubt, maybe it's like a social experiment that she's conducting to see how she's received here in Minneapolis. I don't know, but it doesn't make very much sense.
Oh, no, I think you're exactly right. And I'm glad sometimes it's good to be, because I obviously have a bias here because of what I do. But when you talk to a journalist and you, it's like, why are you doing this? It seems to me, I mean, and this is just the standard operating procedure. We see it with Richard Spencer and the rest of these clowns. They specifically go there, and they're not going there really to have their speech in front of a group like an Ann Coulter. They're not going there. They're going there so they can get all their guys with the cameras out to film the protesters who are furious that they're there, because that helps push their I'm a victim narrative. And I think you're exactly right. When you look at the grand 2-day tour here, stand aside, Dessa, we got a tour for you. When you look at these two spots, I mean, I think that where's a bunch of liberals? Ooh, Minneapolis. And I think that that is, I think you're exactly right. I think this is more about basically creating a visual narrative that they can see here I was protesting because I'm a victim.
Right. Yeah, I think that would only help her ratings if that were to happen. But yeah, I hope that our local theater goers won't fall for that. And I'm sure that, you know, there have been rumblings of people planning things already, and I think that folks are going to be smart about it. So I'm looking forward to see whatever happens.
I will say this: nothing would be more embarrassing for her than if no one protested and like seven people showed up. Because and when you're looking at the ticket price, which was you had to hear $39 to $89, dear Lord, don't get me wrong, she's going to get a few people. But if like 25 people show up and no one is out protesting or anything like this, they're going to ignore this. They're not going to come back to Minneapolis, because as opposed to like a Berkeley or San Francisco, they're looking to this is protest bait, and they're looking to basically create a scene. It would be a massive embarrassment if no one cared and she came into town. So that would be the great end.
That would be hilarious. And I think that would be just the perfect way to employ our Minnesota passive aggressiveness. I think it would go over quite well.
I'd pay big money to watch her storm out to MSP to get out of town. Oh, God, that would be hilarious. All right. You can find all these stories up on citypages.com, and you just have to search for Susan Dew Stories there. And, of course, the cover story is currently out on City Pages, so just go pick up a copy of that. Susan Dew. Susan, thanks for coming on back. Let's have you back before too much longer.
Yeah, sounds good. You have a great day.
You too. Take care.